It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. Fred, are you liking when you look at your way, way, way too early standings here, or are you not liking what you're looking at in your leagues right now after 2 days when some of those people have like 85 points?
Yeah, no, I'm generally happy. All my goal is usually during April is to just not get buried. That being said, in Tout Wars, I was in last at one point in May last season and came back and won, but I don't want to be in that position. If I'm anywhere in the top half, then I'm fine. And like you said, it's way, way, way too early even to worry about that. But, you know, if my players aren't hurt, and although other than Sean Tolleson on my labor team, everyone's been at least good enough to not make me too upset.
And this is the official way too early overreaction version of the Fantasy 411. But that's what we have to work with, so let's start doing some overreacting. Start with a couple injuries. One, not quite so new, but still some relevance to people. I think less about A.J. Pollock. Obviously, if you have him, you are holding on to him. But to me, the interesting question is Yasmani Tomas. He's a guy, I think, that draws a lot of sort of different opinions. I think a lot of people have kind of given up on him already after not a lot of time. He if nothing else, he's got a hit tool, and he's built like a guy who should hit for power. Do you like him at all, or do you just kind of stay away from that situation?
Well, the Pollock injuries made me interested in Tomas in like a 15-team league or maybe on my bench in a 12-team league. I think in a 10-team league, if you're replacing Pollock, you can do better than that. Or just in general, if you're looking on waivers, you want to make him prove himself more. But at least now his playing time is completely secure.
Yeah, I guess that's the question is how do we think all of that is going to sort of get divvied up? Because there are a bunch of different players. It's funny, it's not funny that Pollock's hurt, obviously, but the Diamondbacks went from having a lot of really interesting good, established quality outfielders to having a lot of uncertainty between free agency, trade, injuries. When you kind of look at that whole situation, is there anybody who jumps out at you?
Yeah, I mean, Socrates Brito to me was interesting prior to Pollock being injured because I felt like he could challenge Tomas for playing time. That being said, like in a mixed league, you're going to want to see him actually earn that. He was the franchise's minor league player of the year last year. So it seems like maybe he has like a decent amount of potential, and his skill set's fairly diverse. So he was interesting to me, and now I would want him in a 15-team league. I saw a couple people draft him in 15-team leagues earlier in March, and I thought, oh, I think that's a little bit of a stretch, even though he interests me, but not to the point of drafting him. But now those people who drafted him, you know, it's really paid off for them because it looks like he's going to start at least against right-handers, and then we'll take it from there.
Then another injured outfielder, Ben Revere, apparently had something go wrong on his first at-bat, maybe even first pitch of the season, and he's going to be out for a little while. He's got a rib cage issue. Michael Taylor steps in. I can't remember if we've talked about Michael Taylor. I'm not a big Michael Taylor guy. I just am not convinced that the tools have turned into skills. I'm not entirely convinced the tools are going to turn into skills. Do you like Taylor more than I do?
I don't, actually. Like, if you have Revere in a deeper mixed league, 15 or 20 teams, then I can, if Taylor's on waivers, I guess that's the obvious switch because there's probably not a lot there on waivers, especially guys who could have a full-time role. But I really just don't see, I know the Nats, like, maybe Dusty Baker will keep him at the top of the lineup, and I know he's tried it, but I don't see that fit, even while Revere's out. Like, I feel like he's a bottom-of-the-lineup 230 hitter. Like, I know he can get double-digit homers and steals, but there are a lot of outfield options. I just don't see the batting average being there.
The one thing that I may take issue with is I think there's a pretty good chance that Taylor does lead off. I don't know. I mean, that might just mean more at-bats of a guy hitting 220, but you look at how this all breaks down. Mostly you just kind of look at what I think Dusty Baker's history suggests and the other options. You know, I don't think they're going to lead off Murphy. I don't think they're going to lead off Jason Wirth, though I think he's probably the right guy out of given his skill set and what they have. I think there's a pretty good chance Taylor leads off. Now, again, I don't know that means I like him anymore. I think he might run more if he's hitting seven, but I do think the one thing is, if you're counting runs, I think if he gets on base with any frequency at all, he'll score some runs, because I do think he's going to hit high on that lineup.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, and we're talking about kind of the difference, I guess, a little bit between new age and traditional thinking as far as, you're right, I look at Taylor in that probably sub-300 on base percentage and think that on a good team like the Nationals that they have to put Worth or Murphy at the top of the lineup for a month. But you're right, Dusty Baker is pretty traditional, and maybe he will hit Taylor in the top spot, and that would allow him to score more runs. But as you also mentioned, it will also probably allow him to drag your batting average down even more than he already will.
All right, moving on to what is pretty consistently, I would think, nearly every year, the biggest fantasy question in the first week of the season, as all of these ninth-inning plans start meeting reality, and we start seeing how well they're going to hold up, how teams are going to stick to their announced plans. I think the most surprising ninth-inning news this week was that the Astros will actually go with Luke Gregerson in the ninth and not Ken Giles. I have to admit I'm surprised. I'm very surprised, and I like Gregerson, but I don't think this is a way that they're going to be more aggressive with Giles as the guy pitching in high-leverage situations, which is foreshadowing. It's weird to me, but I don't think Gregerson's a guy who's going to be in jeopardy. I think he's good enough that I don't see him pitching his way out of that role. So how much do you like Gregerson, and how much does it ding? Well, obviously it dings Giles, but is Giles still on your radar if he's not getting saves?
Yeah, like in a 10 or 12 team league, I'm probably going to have to release Giles. You know, if you're right, that this surprised me too, although the longer we went, it was like the Blue Jays situation where the longer we went through spring training without an announcement, you started to wonder if there was more there than what we initially thought. So then I was less surprised, at least, when I saw the surprising news. But, yeah, shallow leagues, I think you have to let go of Giles because I think he is going to be a typical one-inning, eighth-inning setup man, and I'm not convinced that he'll be any better in that role than, say, someone like Darren O'Day, who's sitting out on waivers in basically every shallow league. So, you know, I don't think he'll win more games necessarily than O'Day. If Gregerson keeps the job, which, as you said, he has the skills to do, then Giles is just one of the many, or, you know, one of a select few good eighth-inning relievers who can get you 85 or maybe even 95 strikeouts, but that doesn't play in a shallow league. In a 15-team league or in a deeper league, you'd love to handcuff the two of them if you can go to the Giles owner, you know, and suggest a trade with his diminished value.
Going from a team with two very good options to a team that may have no good options, the Phillies, the two guys that seem to be the leading candidates, though they have said all along, look, it could be anybody, and they've been pretty clear about that. The two guys who seem the leading candidates, Hernandez and Hinojosa, both had tough outings in the first week. This is a wide-open situation. Do you have any read on it? To me, it's just I'm going to wait till somebody's got four or five saves there before I even pick up on them. I'm not going to be that with the way I would with some teams. I'm not going to be really jumping in there at all, maybe even when we do know. Is there anybody you like even a little bit out of that mix?
Nope, not at all. No, I agree with you. I'd want to see someone get four or five saves in a row. Even then, I might stay skeptical because We could see a reliever have four or five, you know, solid appearances in a row, and that may not mean that they can continue that. When you combine the skills of the relievers that they have as options, plus the uncertainty, plus the chances that this is a team that finishes in the bottom two or three teams in baseball this year, I just don't see the reward for taking a chance. People who already took a chance on Hernandez or Hinojosa, all they've been rewarded with so far is, you know, a really poor outing. So, and I think we could see more of that. I just don't think there'll be enough help from any of them to justify the few saves you can get.
Here's the question to me about the Phillies, and I think the answer is still, I can't think of somebody, but is there a guy in that whole mix? If we go just beyond the top two, if you look at that whole bullpen and all the options, is there a guy whose skills you like enough that if they said he's the guy, then you'd be interested, or is there not even somebody that you like if you get the guarantee that he's pitching the ninth?
Yeah, I guess Hernandez could have been that guy, but like he just doesn't seem to be all the way back. Like, he wasn't really healthy during spring training. He didn't look good in his first appearance of the season. Like, we've seen David Hernandez have effective stretches at times when he's with the Diamondbacks, but I'm not convinced that he's at 100% right now, or at least is completely recovered. Maybe this is his new 100%. But it's not 100% of what he was.
Yeah, I'm just not buying. I think the the most interesting bullpen right now is Atlanta, where Jason Grilly, well, one, we don't really know how healthy Jason Grilly is. I don't know that we got a real clear view in spring training. I really liked DeRosa Vizcaino late last year. He came on very strong. And the Braves are essentially saying they are doing what analytical types have wanted teams to do for a while. It's sort of the easiest way. I mean, what we really want to see them do is just get away from inning-based stuff entirely and go matchups and go... There's a lot of stuff you'd like to see, but within the realm of reality, I think the most sort of analytically friendly thing that a team could do that still would lead to guys not complaining all the time, if we're being honest, is what the Braves are doing, which is our ninth inning guy is Jason Grilly, and our high leverage guy at some point is Vizcaino. I think that can work. The question is, does that leave you liking either of those guys in fantasy?
I'd love to stash Vizcaino right now. And I'm thinking back to something you've mentioned on previous editions of the podcast, where you feel like sometimes the managers have these intentions, but then once we get into the season, they revert back to like a pretty standard old-fashioned setup where the best reliever ends up in the ninth inning. I can just see that happening if Grilly blows additional save chances where Vizcaino got them through the seventh or the eighth, and then Grilly comes out in the ninth and blows it. Like, it just leaves such a bad taste in everyone's mouth that I feel like eventually it just settles with Vizcaino. And then I've always had this theory with the Braves this season where I just feel like Vizcaino ends up as the closer by the summer because either Grilly's good and they deal him, or Grilly's not good and then they just don't want him anywhere near the ninth inning, and I don't see anyone else in that bullpen.
And the last point is a really key point there that I think you can kind of look for in various clubs, but certainly with the Braves. You know, as to how they stick with it, I think that I tweeted something at Mark Bowman, our Braves beat reporter, the first day when they did that. I said, Freddie Gonzalez, accidental sabermetrician. I didn't even think – I thought they stumbled onto this, and I read Mark's writing, and no, this is actually what they're doing. But the reason I bring that up is that with Freddie Gonzalez, that's one of the managers I am most skeptical of this sticking with. I'm not a bash Freddie guy the way some people are. I think he does some things really well, but – he is one of the more conventional guys around. John Coppolella is, I think, an analytics-friendly guy, but this is not an organization that is changing the way things are done. So I think what you were hinting at a little earlier is absolutely right. This is not a team that I really trust to stick with this plan, even as they're announcing it now. I have to think that certainly no later than June 1, maybe May 1, maybe a week from now, something a little more conventional comes into play. I hope not, as a baseball fan, but that's my expectation.
Yeah, I mean, how many times can he sit there after a game, and talk to the media where Grilly's blown the lead in the ninth inning, and then depending on where you're playing that game, there may not be any chance to recover, and how much he blows the lead, like there may not be a chance to recover from that and come up to bat again. At least in the game earlier in this week, they got a chance to bat again, and recover it. They didn't, but they got a chance to recover it. So, I don't know. I still feel like it's Vizcaino, and if you can get him, if he's on waivers in a shallow league or something, or if you feel like you can get him cheap right now because he's not the closer, I think it's a move worth making.
One other team that seems to have a set situation, but you wonder. The Rangers, Sean Tolleson is the announced guy. Had a very, very bad outing to start the year. But I don't think it's just about one outing that we're asking this, because I think he's a guy that all along, even as he was pitching well, you kind of wondered who was next. He just doesn't feel like one of those guys that is still going to be a clear ninth-inning guy in a year, 2 years. Do you have skepticism? Well, first of all, do you have skepticism on Tolleson? Are you worried? Again, not just based on one game, because you just can't do that, but between one game and sort of the broader combination of factors, is he a guy you're a little nervous about?
Yeah, he's a guy I have become nervous about. I wasn't nervous about him in February, but he didn't have a great spring in the sense of, I think it was his back, but he dealt with, like, he's really late getting started this spring. And then we all know that there are a lot of other really good options in that Rangers bullpen, so he doesn't have a lot of margin for error. And the Rangers are a team that expects to compete for the postseason. So I felt like this was, as we got it through the second half of March, now, and he was fine in his spring training appearances, but I started to feel like this was really a loaded situation for him where he needed to come out and convert those initial few save chances and you know, reestablish himself because he didn't have the room to have a rough April off kind of a shortened spring. And then his first save chance went fine. His second save chance went very, very poorly. And, you know, I know fantasy owners are panicking right now. And if they want to add, you know, Sam Dyson or – the problem is there's no set guy who I think for sure would take over for him. Like, I can understand that. I still do think Tolleson probably gets the next save chance. Do you?
I would think so. I would think so. I think the way they operate is it's decisive. They're decisive when it's time to make a change, but I don't think that's an organization that really overreacts. So I don't think they're going to be rushing to make a change. But to me, that's the big question. You mentioned Dyson. There's Kayla. Look, I'm not going to be the slightest bit surprised if Jake Diekman's the guy. Talk about a guy who's got the skills who to me, I think is going to be a dominant reliever this year. That's sort of the question is, it's a great position to be in if you're the Rangers, but as a fantasy player, who are you betting on?
Yeah, and there's no one like there. Corey Schwartz actually tweeted to me yesterday that recently, you know, going back to last season, that usually Dyson is the one who comes in the latest. So if we want to talk about which one's maybe the next in line to get the save chance, it could be Dyson. So it may, based on Corey's, he threw out a number. I don't have it in front of me right now, but you know, based on the number he threw at me, I think I would go with Dyson, but he's not sure enough in a lot of leagues to make it worth stashing. Maybe you could stash him for a week just to see how Tolleson's next save chance or two go. I mean, this is someone who needs to convert, you know, five or so in a row right now to hang on to that job, I think, which is like what I thought going into the season and now even more so.
Yep. For the most part this week, we're going to be talking about sort of borderline questionable situations. You drafted your stars. You're probably not dealing a star in the first week. But there's one star that I wanted to talk a little about. You brought up Madison Bumgarner, a little shaky in his opening start. I don't want to overreact. We talked over the winter about just how good this guy is and how I kind of sold him short and took a look at the numbers and realized he's better than I realized. But I have a little bit of a health worry about him. He had this foot thing. I'm not selling on him, but I just kind of want to – it's almost like I kind of want to put a pin in it. You know, you wrote in our notes, worried, no, me either. I'm not all the way to worried, but I'm paying attention because if he's got – if the foot thing's completely gone, and I don't think we know, and he's not going to tell us, but a couple of little things that could be nagging injuries – I don't know. I'm just a little, like I said, I'm kind of putting a pin in it. I'm not all the way to worried. Are you just not even worried? It's one start, not an issue, never mind. If somebody offers him in trade, you're doing what you'd normally do, or is it even 5% docked for you on him?
Yeah, I think here's how I tried to think about it. If you were a Bumgarner owner, you could probably go out and offer him out around your league to those lower-end aces right now. So would you rather have Syndergaard? Would you rather have Kluber? Would you rather have Strasburg? So I'll throw that back to you. Like, are you worried enough that you would swap him? Because he went ahead of all those pitchers in drafts. So after one start, would you swap him for some of those pitchers?
Well, the thing is, two of those three guys are guys I want to see do it this year. I mean, you know I am the biggest Syndergaard fan there is, but I still – he scares me a little. The risk factor, the health risk, scares me a little. And so, you know, Kluber's the one guy in that bunch that I would at least think about it. I would be intrigued. I would listen to what somebody had to say. I'm not cutting bait now. I think it's more, again, the other way around. If I were looking to acquire him, I'd be less aggressive about an opportunity to do that than I might have been otherwise.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Like, we'll be watching his next start really closely. Because I'm an active trader, I did think about that. In the Labor League, my top two pitchers are Dallas Keuchel and Sonny Gray, and I wasn't totally thrilled with those as my top two pitchers. I would have been thrilled if it was Bumgarner in either of those pitchers. And I thought to myself after his start, maybe I should just shoot a quick email to whomever owns Bumgarner and say, would you like to swap him for, say, Keuchel or Gray, who looked great in his first start. But I'll tell you this, I didn't send the email. So at least I decided that I kind of want to see another start, which at that point, if it's seven innings, one run, there's no point in sending the email anyway. So I guess I've decided I'm not going to jump on to that, even though I could kick myself later. Not that the person would say yes anyways, but I could kick myself later for not at least asking, because Keuchel, like after the first couple innings especially, just looked pretty much like himself in his first start of the season.
A guy that I'm sort of I'm not as high on as other people, but I also think has more fantasy value than I tend to think about. I tend to think Tyson Ross's name came up a lot at the deadline last year, and I sort of was really skeptical of the people who treated him as a potential ace, because I think a lot of his success comes from pitching in San Diego, and I would be very skeptical of him elsewhere. But, you know, you look, I sort of have to remind myself that overall that doesn't mean the numbers aren't good. The numbers are good. But he had a fairly lousy first start. He led the league in walks last year, and that's the kind of guy that those guys make me more nervous than others. I just feel like those you strike out a lot of guys, you walk a lot of guys, a lot of wild pitches. I feel like that can go real bad real quick, and you're left with a problem. Where are you on Tyson Ross right now?
Yeah, I'm not expecting him really to take the next step. His opening day start was really bad. I'm not expecting that to be the new Tyson Ross. But I did mention to you in the notes, yeah, that I get a lot of questions about him because he's like 15 whip points from becoming an ace because he gets the 200 strikeouts, and his ERA is usually quite low, like low threes. If he could put up a whip, you know, in the 1.10, maybe even 1.15 range, now we're talking about something pretty special, but he doesn't because of the control. And he just tends to be, and the control also limits him going deep into starts. And then because he doesn't go as deep into starts, it's hard to build a really high win total, especially with a pretty weak lineup, you know, supporting him. So to me, Ross is like a high-end number three starter. You know, if you started with a Keuchel type that is your ace, like a low-end ace that doesn't get a high strikeout rate, then I think Ross is a nice fit as a number three starter. But I'm not expecting him to take that next step. I was kind of interested last year. Last year was kind of the end of my rope with him where I wanted him to take that next step, and he really didn't.
We've got a guy who looks a little bit like a Tyson Ross starter kit in Aaron Sanchez. People got really excited about him during the spring. He pitched very well against a team that's probably better than we give them credit for offensively right now. The Rays, he was good against lefties, he kept the walks down. I understand the excitement about him, but I still am going to be the guy who makes him prove it to me. Where are you on Sanchez?
Yeah, after seeing his first start and what he did in spring training, I think he has to be picked up in pretty much every league. I mean, he is someone who came in on a mission. He gained a lot of good weight over the winter. He's trying to be – he looks noticeably thicker to me on the mound, and where he's trying to be more durable and stronger, and he's talked about how – that extra, you know, core stability, and he thinks that's going to make him a more consistent pitcher. And it did show in his first start where his control was really good, and he's someone who's had that pedigree where through the minors and from when he was drafted where they expected him to become a really successful major league starter. So I know there's still the issues against lefties, you know, career-long, not from his first start. I'm really closely watching that start against the Yankees that's coming up on Tuesday of next week because I think the Yankees are going to throw a lefty-heavy lineup against him, and we'll see, and he's at home and it's hitter-friendly home park, but I'm picking him up now. At the very least, I'm going to pick him up and let him, give him a chance to burn me, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still willing to be wrong on him, which means I'm going to be wrong because I think everywhere he is getting grabbed. And for me, he's just a guy this year. And I really hope I'm wrong. I mean, he's somebody who would be a lot of fun to watch if he becomes what I think people think he can be. But I'm still willing to be wrong on him. I'm willing to let somebody else strike gold on him and me not. Between the lefty thing and the walk thing, I'm just not there yet. But, hey, it's distinctly possible that I'm going to be wrong on him.
No, but you raise a really good point where there's only so much roster space, and there are going to be a few pitchers like Sanchez. Juan Nicasio is another one in Pittsburgh who looked great in spring training, looked great in his first start. There's going to be a few of those guys out on waivers, those guys who could be terrific or they could burn you, and you only have enough roster space usually to add one, maybe two of them, and you're going to have to pick, like, your target. So I'm saying Sanchez would probably be one of my preferred targets. It always depends on who the other options are, but he'd be one of mine. Just because you pass on Sanchez, even if he turns out, well, the person that you pick as your kind of sleeper high upside guy, he might turn out as well. You know, they're important decisions, but you can be wrong and miss someone. It doesn't really hurt your team as long as you're right on the one you do pick.
And for the record, I do like Sanchez a little more, you teed us up here, than Juan Nicasio. Nicasio is a guy I thought had found a home as a reliever. I'm still a little skeptical of, I think he's basically a two-pitch guy. I'm not sure that's enough. I'm not buying, and if it's those two and I've got an opening, I'm Sanchez over Nicasio. Are you now... Is one start enough to have you on Nicasio, or Is he still a prove-it guy for you?
Yeah, I'm definitely more interested. Seeing him do it in the regular season, you know, has piqued my interest. I would probably pick up Sanchez over Nicasio, too. That being said, I think that a theme we're going to notice as this year rolls along is the difference in schedule difficulty from the AL to the NL, especially from the AL East. Like, Sanchez next week, I believe he has two starts, and those two starts are against the Yankees and the Red Sox. And Nicasio next week, now he is facing the Tigers in an interleague game, but in general, he should have a lot of, you know, really appealing starts as the season goes on, because there are a lot of teams that don't really look competitive in the National League. So, you know, that, like, Sanchez is going to have a much tougher road to hoe than Nicasio probably will.
Now we move to the guy that probably everybody who is listening has been waiting 25 minutes for us to talk about. Really the story in baseball the first week of the season, and that is Trevor Story. He was a guy I kind of had an eye on in my drafts beforehand, even knowing that he might not have the job for long, and I just kind of got beaten to him. He's somebody, again, I wasn't willing to overdraft, but I definitely had an eye on. This is not that shocking. It'll be that shocking if he does this for a month, but for him to have a huge week, kind of within maybe what we would have expected. He's a guy who should put up numbers if he plays regularly. So the question is, how do you assess that guy? How do you, if you have him, how do you assess whether to sell high? If you need the help, how do you assess what to give up for him? I mean, that's kind of the question with a guy like this. So where do you sort of frame him right now, if either if you have him or if you're looking to get him?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably look to sell high just because there's a decent chance that Jose Reyes will be back at some point this season, and then that could affect Story's playing time. That being said, while he is playing, I am pretty bullish on him just because, you know, in the minors, like last season, 20 homers, 22 steals, and I love fantasy, you know, assets that have that power and speed combination, and then the Rockies are putting him high in the lineup, you know, Coors Field. Like, it just all adds up to a really good rookie season. And then it's that the shortstop position is so weak in general. I just for fun, I pulled up kind of our rankings from the player preview. And once you get out of the top five, you start looking at Elvis Andrus, Starlin Castro, Ian Desmond, Brandon Crawford. Like, would you rather own Story than those players?
I like Crawford quite a lot, so I probably would rather have Crawford, but I'd probably take Story over the rest of those guys.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing with Story to me. I'm sort of willing to say, you know what, it's if we're talking 2 months, and we don't know how long, but if we're talking till, say, June 1, it's essentially 2 months of that performance plus 2 months to figure out what I'm doing over the last 4 months. And that's, I think, the thing you kind of sometimes need to think about, that is, if it's just this week, that's another matter. But if you've got a guy for a while and you know there's a finite end time, then you also have that time to explore trades for what you're going to do for the remaining 4 months, somebody else who might emerge, those kind of options. It's not like you go from him to nothing on the day that Reyes comes back. You go from him to whatever backup plan you've established.
No, I totally agree. And, you know, friend of the podcast, Nando DeFino, I've oftentimes heard him say a line that I always remember, which is sometimes these things have a way of sorting themselves out. And that could be the case here. Like, we're talking about 2 months or more or a little less. We don't really know, but, you know, maybe someone switches a position because the Rockies have an injury by that time, and Reyes and Story are both in the lineup. Like, you know, we just don't really know. Maybe there ends up being a trade within the Rockies organization by the time Reyes is back. But, like, if Story's hitting really well, you know, they may find a way to keep him in the lineup long term. You know, the bottom line is he's someone who could post 20 home runs this year. He's someone who could steal 15 bases maybe, and there aren't many shortstops that can do that, especially hitting second in a pretty good lineup with a hitter-friendly home park. So, you know, now if I own Story, I would at least go fishing right now out on the trade market to see, would you trade Story right now for Francisco Lindor? Because I would in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, so I mean,
and I wouldn't, Story and I wouldn't even
so
worry about
good
it.
That I'd at least float his name out there to see, you know, or maybe even wait one more week. If he keeps this going, and they're at home this weekend against the Padres, like, if he keeps this going for a few more days, you know, you could float his name out there and see what you can get because of the uncertainty for him long term.
Yeah. Another and go from a Rocky to an ex-Rocky, Corey Dickerson. Ball he hit the other night, in St. Pete. I'm not sure it's landed yet. It might be wedged inside the back wall of that dome. It's four games, and I'm not going to overreact. But with that said, it was nice to be reminded that tools like raw power play at sea level, not just at altitude. I still want to see how much he's going to play, and I still want to see exactly how this translates losing 5,000 feet of altitude. But I like Dickerson a lot. Where are you on him?
Yeah, I loved Dickerson last season, going into last season, you know, as a member of the Rockies. He was hurt a lot, and, you know, I have the same concerns about how much they're going to play him against left-handers. And they did thin out the roster a bit when they released James Loney. I know James Loney wasn't an option, you know, to cut his playing time against left-handers, but just in general, that gave Logan Morrison a full-time role, and it just made the roster maybe a little thinner, which maybe makes him a little more likely to keep Dickerson in it against lefties if he's hitting well in general. There are a lot of hitter-friendly road parks in that division. So, I mean, yes, he's going to have to play 81 games at the Trop, but, you know, when he's in Baltimore, when he's in Toronto, when he's in New York, you know, he is going to get to hit in hitter-friendly home parks for a decent amount of games this season. Yeah, seeing his power in the first week has kind of reminded me that maybe a lot of us went a little too far burying him when he was traded from Colorado.
Also, I hinted at this a few minutes ago. That lineup is not the Blue Jays by any means, but I think that lineup is a little better than it's getting credit for right now. I think they're going to be competent. I think he's going to have some decent hitters around him and some opportunities. This is not a guy who's going to have no RBI chances, nobody driving him in. I think they've got a few guys who can hit. I mean, I Souza is not going to do this all year, but I think a healthy Souza is a nice player. I think that that is not a bad lineup. He is not isolated in a terrible lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's something I thought about going back to Sanchez when I was assessing him, that I think this is a better Rays lineup than we've seen the past couple of years. You know, Longoria is solid, and Forsythe, I think, can mostly extend what he did last year. And Jennings, when he's healthy, is decent. And they're a lineup that's really versatile, like, because they can mix and match and get Brandon Guyer in there when they need to. And, yeah, I think it's going to be an okay lineup. I know that the Rays are a popular sleeper pick to make the postseason this year from a lot of people, and the lineup is a big part of that reason.
Let's move on to next week's two start pitchers. And there are some interesting names on here. Mike Fier is a guy we talked about, a guy I like. I'm not crazy about him against the Royals and Tigers. The next guy on this list, though, Andrew Cashner, at Philly and at home against Arizona. That seems like, even though Philly's not a great park, that seems like a pretty good match, a couple of games. I like him. I like Nice some at Detroit and home against the Brewers. I like Nice generally, so I'm high on him. Nicasio, Matt Moore. It's an interesting group. Is there anybody you particularly like out of this group?
Yeah, I'd say maybe Matt Moore the most, because he's going to be home for both of his starts next week. And, you know, we just pumped the Rays tires a little bit. And, you know, he's going to face the Indians and the White Sox, solid teams. But, you know, he looked decent in his first start against Toronto. I think I maybe like him the most. It's interesting. It's a really interesting group of two-start pitchers in the sense of, you know, I like Nice for this season, but Detroit has a lot of players that really do well against lefties. So that's a tough start. If you can get past that start, the Brewers start looks good. You know, Nicasio, well, are we sold on him enough to start him in Detroit? Like again, that's a pretty good veteran lineup. Cashner, I feel like I'm kind of off of, even though I really included him because the matchups are so tempting, like the Phillies and then a home start. You know, like, it's tempting, but he was really poor last year, and then he didn't start this season off well. I feel like Moore's my favorite of that group, and then probably Fires, even though he wouldn't get the strikeouts probably against the Royals, and then maybe Nice after that.
Let me ask you just philosophically, as you're doing this at this point of the year, as you're streaming guys early, and you look at somebody like an Nicasio, like a Matt Moore, even maybe like an Arenola, is part of your math at this point of the year thinking, you know, if I like this guy over these two starts, maybe I'm holding on to him. Are you just looking for the week right now, or are you also looking at having part of that equation be, you know, I also might hold on to this guy?
Yeah, no, that is part of it. And this is where, you know, the science of fantasy baseball does become a bit of an art, because sometimes there's no way to quantify all those variables. But to give you an example, you know, Kyle Gibson next week has two home starts, White Sox and Angels. It's a pr- pretty good slate for him. Like, if you're going to use Kyle Gibson, that's probably about as good as it'll get for him. At the same time, I would rather pick up Nice on waivers in my league because I think there's a better chance that I would be really excited about owning Nice in 2 months. I mean, maybe it won't work out, but I feel like there's a chance. Kyle Gibson, I'm just not expecting him to take a step forward. So, I mean, if there was a two-star pitcher I really, really like the matchups, I'd pick him up for sure. But when I'm debating between them in the early part of the season, I'd definitely rather take the one who I feel like maybe there's a chance I'll want to keep on my roster.
Moore is really the reason I asked that question, because that's a guy who I am open to the possibility that he might be really, really good this year. He looked really exciting at times in that first start, kind of got away from him a little bit, but that's a guy who I will not be at all surprised if in mid-June we're saying, you know, Matt Moore might be an all-star. I mean, that's the kind of we've seen how good he can be. He's moving farther away from the surgery. He was really interesting. He was really strong at the end of the year. That's a guy who, if I'm picking up for two starts, I'm definitely thinking about if I like those two starts, he might be on my team all year long.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when people look at his first start, they may not get the final stat line. They may not get too excited. But the Blue Jays lineup was the best in baseball against left-handers last year. And they're relatively, basically unchanged, you know, from last season's lineup. So he took on a lineup that's terrific against lefties. Same thing with Drew Smyly earlier in the series, you know, and they held their own. I think that you'll see if Moore pitches as well as he did against the Blue Jays this week in those two, or next week in those two home starts, I think you'll see better results. And that's maybe when the hype train will start to get going a little more.
Yep. And that's a guy that, I'll feel really dumb if I pass on a chance to get him, just because, again, we know how good he can be. That's a guy I don't want to be wrong on. That's a guy where if somebody else picks him up and I decided not to, I'm going to be really frustrated.
Yeah, and he's got name value. So if he has 2 good months, he's someone who people will want in trade talks.
Yep.
You know, maybe someone like Nice won't have that same name value in trade talks if he has a couple of good months, just because he's not, it wasn't as touted as much as Moore coming up. But, I mean, Moore was really, really hyped in fantasy circles a couple seasons ago.
Yep. One last topic before we close it off. As we're talking about pitchers and matchups, it's hard to know who's going to be real good and who's not lineup-wise, but I think we can start having some clue as to who you'll target for opposing lineups for streaming starters. Some of these are obvious, particularly given the ballparks, but are there maybe lineups that aren't so obvious that you're sort of interested in guys going against this year?
Yeah, you're right. There are some obvious ones, but they're pretty much all in the National League where you've got, you know, Phillies, Braves, Padres. You don't mind targeting even the Reds and the Brewers, even though their lineups are okay, but probably the opposing starter is not very good, which helps your chances but to get a win. But so I'm trying to think of which lineups I wouldn't mind targeting in the American League, because we don't really want to cut off half the player pool by not, you know, getting excited about targeting some of those lineups. I feel like I don't mind going against the Angels. I actually am interested in what you think about this. I don't mind going against the Angels maybe almost as much as any team in the AL right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm with you, especially
the ballpark. Angels and A's both to me.
You know, there's Trout, Pujols, and then a lot of guys that don't really get me very excited. And they, unless you're facing Garrett Richards, you're probably not facing a great starter. The A's would probably be my next one. I don't mind that the A's, they can mix and match a lot. They're a little like the Rays in that regard with their lineup, but same thing. If you're not facing Sonny Gray, you're probably not facing a great starter. You're probably facing them at their, if you're facing them at their park, it's hitter friendly or it's pitcher friendly. And if you get them on the road, you know, you're at home against them. So I think those are probably the two I would target in the AL.
Yeah, agreed. And again, especially those two ballparks, if you get them at their home parks, those are not good places to hit.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't think of any others, though, in the AL that, you know, that I'm really excited about. The Twins don't really scare me, but I don't know if I target them. Maybe that's the next one for me, but I can't really think of any other ones that I'm really excited about facing. Not the Rays anymore, either.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would put the Rays and Twins both in category of, they're certainly not going to scare me off, but I'm not seeking them out.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should get an idea in the next month or so of which ones will be really strikeout prone. And that's, I think, more of a factor than some fantasy owners realize. They're always chasing the, like, 7 innings, 1 run, which, for sure, that's great. But, you know, like, for example, last year, the Astros had a good lineup, but they also struck out a ton. So you could start starting pitchers against them and know that you're going to get a fair amount of strikeouts.
All right. Well, that's week one of the regular season of the Fantasy 411 podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And thanks, Fred Zinke, MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, for chatting here. I would say we do this again in a week.
Yeah, for sure. We'll have a lot more data to analyze in a week.